Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Macko. It's Bob. How you doing?
I'm good, Maddie. I'm good. It's Thursday. So the weekend is coming, and I don't know if this weekend, well, it can't be as great as the last one was for sports, but it'll be a really good sports weekend. Fingers crossed, the weather, you expect it to be cold, but hopefully it's not a hellscape as it has been recently. So yeah, good. Things are good, Matt. How about you? That's the important thing, Matt. How about
it? It is. Well, you know me, Bob, the emotions go up and down. No, it's not. It's always sunny and 82 degrees here. But I wanted to throw this out to you. How often do you have the boring work dream or just the boring dream? Because, like, there's nothing worse than when you have a dream where nothing happens. And it's like, wait a minute, this is where dragons and wizards and orgies happen. But last night or early this morning, I had this dream and it was so long. And it's centered around doing the new sort of slant to the show. And the whole dream was I had bet the Steelers to win the Super Bowl over the Rams, and I parlayed it with the over. That was the dream.
Well, it's pretty dull.
Yes.
So successful. I don't really remember many of my dreams, since you're honestly asking, but it's so weird you should ask me this tonight, because last night I had a dream that Merrick and I were talking about Nick Ritchie. This is absolutely
pretty boring.
I woke up this morning and he was scolding me for thinking there wouldn't be a market for him, which, you know, will probably happen by 2 o'clock today anyway. But yeah, I woke up and thought, well, that was a waste of REM.
I mean, you couldn't even pick a better player. It was Nick Ritchie. At least argue about Nylander that people get, you know, passionate about.
You know, if the two of us went toe-to-toe, Mitch Marner is a cornerstone of the team. No, he's not. Jack Campbell is overrated. No, he's not. Like, there are any number of phony but interesting conversations we could have. This one was just a dud. This one was standing in line at the driver's license bureau waiting to renew, which I've never done.
I was about to say, what's that feel like, Bob, when you're renewing your driver's license?
Well, I've stood there with my wife, so it's certainly not interesting when you're renewing someone else's. I'd imagine it's not better when it's your own. I've had a weird time lately, and I want to start off my explanation with a statement, Matt. At a certain point in your life, you gain so much from wisdom and experience, but the trade-off is that you lose one thing a year, and last year, I lost, and we discussed this on the pod, I lost roller coasters. Went on a roller coaster with my daughter, walked off, thought, I feel so sick and so dizzy, and I've loved roller coasters my whole life. But at this stage, it's like, you know, it's just, I've passed through the portal. It's just unpleasant to go on roller coasters. So that part of my life is gone. I will probably never get on another roller coaster. And this past week, I lost tobogganing.
Oh, no. No, Bob.
There was a run. I said, I'll go down first to see if it's safe. It was not. So there's a steep beginning, and I'm bumping down it going real fast on a very cheap toboggan. And I catch a lip, and I sail, and I land. And what I couldn't have known until that exact moment when I landed, was that there was a rock sticking out. And I landed on my tailbone on the rock.
Yeah.
I saw white for a minute, rolled to the side, and the pain has been extraordinary and undignified, because it's very hard to shuffle around because your ass is sore.
Where was it? Which hill was this?
It was right behind our place up at Deerhurst.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
And, you know, it wasn't really like a sanctioned hill, which is why I was trying. It looked fine. It wasn't particularly steep. How on earth there could have been a protruding rock when there was so much snow? And actually, you could even see the grooves of other toboggans going over it. So on paper, it wasn't a big risk, but it turned out terribly. And I realized as I was lying there, like, just like roller coasters, not, I didn't realize lying there, I meant more in bed in pain a week later, that I'll probably never get on a toboggan again. And that is just life. You lose one thing a year that you used to love.
Yeah, I 100% agree. There's things you lose. Like, for instance, running when hungover. Like when I was younger in the 20s and early to mid 30s, could easily do it, could bang it out. Now not so much. But I want to stick with the toboggan thing for a second. Because there's always that moment when you're whipping down and you're going faster than you realize. And you think to yourself, do I put my foot out? Like, no, I shouldn't do that. I should ride it out. And the moment you make that decision, less than a half second later, you realize that was a bad decision. I should have just stuck with my first instinct.
Well, tobogganing is one of those things that I imagine as we get safer and safer as a society, someone's going to eventually examine. Like, they don't let kids bring basketballs into the schoolyard anymore, which is weird because they let them go in, you know, during a pandemic. But you're not allowed to bring a basketball. And I'm not even saying that they shouldn't go in. It's just it's a weird sliding scale of what's dangerous and what isn't.
Yeah.
And yet tobogganing, you get on a flimsy piece of plastic and throw yourself down a mountain. Like skiing, you're a skier, right?
Yes.
Skiing's nuts when you think about it. You strap two planks to it and fall down a mountain. And people always get hurt. Like, what was your worst skiing accident?
Actually, this is going to make it sound bad. I've never really had a bad skiing accident. I'm never one that says I'm the most athletic, but I have good balance and I almost never, ever fall. But your point is a good one. You're on these two beams of wood or, you know, specialized plastic, whatever the hell they are now, and you fall down a mountain. And the only thing you have for protection, now a helmet, was two spears. It's like, okay, I'm going to go down this mountain. What do you have to help protect me? Here's some spears. Go at it.
It seems like things don't seem crazy until you stop and think about them. Like, we just grew up doing this stuff. Like, geez, I mean, when it comes to tobogganing, sometimes we didn't even have a toboggan. We just wrap ourselves in garbage bags and literally throw ourselves down the hill.
Yep, 100%.
You know, but damn, it's fun. I'm going to miss it. I feel like I'm a good tobogganer because I had no common sense. One of the rare things that qualifies you to do better when you have no common sense.
Rest in peace, tobogganing, Bob. I'm still doing it partially because my girl, you know, always loves to go tobogganing. I'm trying to think what I've given up. I still went ice skating and I'm a lousy ice skater. I still did it about a week ago. And, you know, I just look ridiculous out there.
I can tell you what you've given up. First of all, you haven't crossed the threshold yet. I'm a couple of years older than you. Mm-hmm. And this is a new thing.
Yeah.
This is really just the last couple of years. Like, you're not over 50. When you get over 50, this is when it kicks in earnest. But I'll tell you what you've given up. You've given up going to see the movies in the theater, which isn't your fault. You would do it if you could, but that ship has sailed. Like, the idea of movie culture is done forever now.
Oh, I don't think so. I think there'll be a resurgence. Look at how much money Spider-Man made, which I went to see in the movie theater the day before they shut everything down. No, what I've given up, Bob, is nightclubs. I gave them up years ago. That's one ship that sailed.
But you never went to nightclubs and you still drink all night. You just do it with guys in suits and you talk about evil.
It's so good. We do talk about evil and we laugh and laugh some more.
Mm-hmm. Sports.
Yes.
Where are you at? I mean, we could do all NFL today, but we did all NFL last week, and we're coming off of two Toronto games. So as much as I think we need to do a preview of the NFL championship weekend, Raptors or Leafs? I feel like we should start there. We haven't talked about them in a while.
We'll do that, but real quick, just a shout-out to Bills fans everywhere. Holy shit, that hurt.
Matt, I honestly think it was the most painful loss of my life. 4-1 was bad. Because of the statistical improbability of it, but it was a first round match, you know, and it's not that they were playing over their heads, but it was a young team, you know, it wasn't as bad as this where like 13 seconds, Matt, 13 seconds. Like how many times in NFL history has a team scored with 13 seconds left on the clock against?
And that's a scenario, I believe zero.
Yeah. Against another team that's of championship quality. It was, and also just, I'm thinking about that last TD pass to Gabriel Davis from Josh Allen, and it just looked like an NFL film's highlight. Everything about it just felt like the period, the consummation of an incredible quarter and a hell of a game. It just looked like NFL history. So as much as there was the mathematical improbability that the Chiefs would come back, there's also a narrative improbability. Like, this is how the guy is supposed to slay the demons, his own and his communities. It just looked like it was supposed to be. So when it wasn't, it just made no sense on any level.
Yeah, you're right. It looked like that touchdown looked like that's how that story ends. And they all lived happily ever after. And they didn't. They died in a wintry cocoon of Orchard Park.
It was the Buffalo version of Montana to Clark. And then
yes,
it was like if the Immaculate Reception had one more play and Dallas went to the other end and scored.
No, that's a perfect way to put it. Also, it's got some football nerdery, so I applaud it. So, and yeah, God, that was...
I got so many things I want to point out, but I'll throw this out to you because this is more your wheelhouse. When the F did Andy Reid become the NFL coach who wins those games?
When they drafted Patrick Mahomes.
I had a feeling that was the answer. You know, give Mahomes credit. Like, and also, like, I don't want to hear Leslie Frazier being interviewed for head coaching jobs. Like, Mahomes was 6-for-6 on the final. Like, OT rules or not, Mahomes was 6-for-6 on that final game-winning drive. I know they were tired.
Yeah.
But we heard all day long about how this was the number one defense and blah, blah, blah. Like, you couldn't stop a guy even once in OT.
The problem was that it was Patrick Mahomes and not, you know, like, Ryan Fitzpatrick or Tua Tagovailoa or Zach Wilson. And listen, the Bills had a very good defense. I never viewed them as a number one level defense just because they didn't play the toughest level of competition.
The problem with great games is someone has to lose them.
Yes.
And I'm sure in retrospect, all the guys who played in it will tell their grandkids about what it was like to be in one of the greatest games ever played. But right now, geez, I just got to, like, I thought about you afterwards. I thought about in your lifetime, your team has won 4 Super Bowls.
Correct.
And mine has had at least as many devastating, era-defining, horrible losses. How do I get on your bandwagon? Like, what do I have to do to become a Giants fan? Like, it seems like a better play.
No, don't right now. It's going to take them years to correct the mistakes made by Dave Gettleman. Now is not the time to get on the Giants bandwagon. They've had the most losses in the last 5 years. Bob, you study literature and mythology. You know the whole deal with the devil Faustian sort of thing?
Yes, the Faustian bargain. Sure, I've heard of it.
Yeah, guess what? As a Giants fan, when the Patriots were 18-0 in the Super Bowl, we all signed it. And the devil said, I will give you not one, but two golden trophies over that angel over there. But you're going to have to take Gettleman and Joe Judge and Ben McAdoo. What Giants fans are living right now, this is the other side of it. This is when the devil comes to pay up.
Okay, I've got a football question for you. And you're going to help me. But before that, I just want to make a point that as a Bills supporter, in this playoff, we've seen Belichick humiliated.
Yep.
Brady have the rug pulled out from under him. Aaron Rodgers
correct.
Humiliated.
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow it's the worst playoff ever. Like, how bad does that have to be when all those things could happen and you remember this is a disaster?
Yeah, no one knows. Everyone forgets all the other ones. You're right. And here, Bob, I'm going to make it even worse for Bills fans. You're going to have to relive this over and over on a SportsCenter top 10. When you look back at greatest comebacks, greatest weekends, greatest performances, greatest playoff games, inevitably, Bills Chiefs overtime is going to be there, and it's going to be high up on the list.
I'm a pretty loyal guy, but everybody has an end to their patience. So if I was to take on another team, and let's just say, you know, I'll just start seeing it on the side, which one would it be? And here's what I need, just so I can feel satisfied with my obvious infidelity here. They're not that great right now, but they're promising. They're in a market that a hipster would like, but it can't be too hipster. So in other words, you know, I don't want to just jump on the bandwagon and be Dallas. You know what I mean? Not that it would be Dallas, but I don't want a team that's too obvious. I want them to be up and
coming. I got it.
Okay.
Yep. But I got it.
Are you going to say Chargers?
Yeah, it's the Chargers because It is, because they, like, you could do Bengals because of Joe Burrow, but they've made the playoffs and won two playoff games. The Chargers haven't made the playoffs, and while Herbert is incredible, we don't know still about that coaching staff. So, and it, you know, it's the Chargers who don't get a lot of love. I would choose them because it's really about what young quarterback you think could be good.
I think this comparison must have been made at some point, but the Chargers are the NFL's version of the Clippers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Second 100%. Team in a big market, have never found a way to win. They've got this amazing team, and yet somehow they find ways to lose. But, you know, like Billy Crystal, an early adopter, eventually, if you get on board, you'll be rewarded.
It's a great analogy. Take the Chargers. By the way, off topic for a second. No, holy shit.
That.
Yeah. But imagine being a Clipper fan, and who knows how many of those draft picks would have worked out, but you also gave up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and you still haven't got out of the second round, and Paul George is always injured, and Kawhi Leonard never talks to anyone. Literally no one has any idea what's going on in his life. If I'm a Clipper fan, I'm second guessing how good I felt the moment they got Kawhi.
It's one of the, thank you, man. Thanks for making an effort to cheer me up. I appreciate that.
I'm doing my best.
Yeah, you're a good man. Okay, I got a question for you. You're in the talk radio trenches, so you're in the whipping up fever where there is none game. So yeah. I'm watching Overdrive. I'm watching Overdrive the other day. Like, I'm just flipping by, and I see the Chiron banner come up. Is Jack Campbell the goalie of the future? It's literally 2 weeks to the day since the last Chiron said, is Jack Campbell going to win the Vezina? And I thought, well, this is the height of madness, right? First of all, trying to peg your hopes to any one goalie. Goalies, come on, guys. They're like kickers, only crazy. But what is a real question for the Leafs right now? I know you have to talk about all of them, and the wackier the better, but in your professional estimation, they beat Anaheim last night in the shootout. The power play looked great, blah, blah, blah. What's a real question with this team?
Well, there's one. There's one real question. But first off, shout out. You know what I'd like to interview? I'd like to interview the person who types the Chiron, because often it's another producer telling them what to write. Yeah. And I wonder if the Chiron operator is like, the fuck? We're really going to put that in there?
So funny. Well, it's great if you want someone to stop and look.
Yeah. Oh, no, exactly. Exactly. To me, this comes down to, if I'm going to do the one question, and I don't think this is hipster, it's about the health and production of Jake Muzzin. Because with Muzzin good, whole becomes better. When they become that, what they were last year, then you've got a top four, you've got two defensive pairings that are really good. We can shut down Connor McDavid good. Then it puts less pressure on Dermott, who's been a disaster, and young guys in Sandin and Liljegren. To me, the Jenga piece of the Maple Leafs is Jake Muzzin.
I tend to agree with you, and if I had to pick one, it would be that as well. And you call it Jenga piece. I think of it as dominoes, because his health affects his own pairing, which affects the whole health of the defense in general, affects how you look at the trade deadline, and what the Leafs may or may not need, and how aggressive they need to be to either, you know, put a Band-Aid on a boo-boo or maybe fix something that could be a huge problem. And then there's history here, because Muzzin has done some really awesome things, but he's been pretty banged up in the playoffs, you know, where he's either banged up or not playing. And, you know, nobody gets less injury prone as they get older. My ass can testify to that via the toboggan. So I think you're right. And so then I guess, like, let's look at these dominoes. Trade deadline is kind of approaching quick.
Yep.
What would you do? Would you do nothing? Would you do something smaller? Would you treat this like a bigger concern?
If I was Dubas, I'm talking to my medical guys, and I'm also talking to just the sports science guys and having like a real conversation about what Jake Muzzin is. I think the problem is, like, you'd love to make the big move, the Chychrun move, you know, but you've given up a lot of first round picks. And this is not me saying, no, you got to save those ones, though you probably should try to, but I don't think the Maple Leafs have enough and I'm sure, you know, Brennan Prittam and Dubas will prove me wrong, but what do they have in their war chest? Because you keep hearing multiple teams are kicking tires at guys like Chychrun. Well, when multiple teams are doing the kicking, I'm sure other teams have more to offer.
It's true. And the Leafs don't really have any primo prospects. So you might have to start partnering up a bunch of assets in order to make something work, because there's not that one plum asset that you could offer up.
Yeah. And,
you know, it's such a good point, too, about like the other teams, because that's really your enemy in all this. Because, you know, Leafs fans will say, oh, you know, Alex Kerfoot hasn't been that good. Maybe he's a guy you should look to move or whatever. But like, it's not like the Leafs don't have, the other teams don't have TV. Like, they watch the Leafs. They know there's a reason we'd get rid of them. So you have to offer up something, and the Leafs don't have a lot of something in the pipeline. So how much do you want to deplete it for the now? That's a really, really hard question. And I'm glad I don't have to make that decision, because I can make a pretty good case for go out and get somebody great. It's a good year for this team to try to win. Or if you miss, you know, the next few years get a little leaner, you know?
Yeah, I don't think I'd get rid of any top prospects or top draft capital, just because you also have, you know, healthy Vasilevskiy and Hedman and Kucherov and Point and what's going on in Florida. Like, it's just in Boston. Boston's the best fourth place team in the NHL. Like, it's just Holy shit. The location of the Maple Leafs. I just don't know. I don't know if I go out and make that deal. I think it's more you do something small that maybe means you don't have to rely as much on, say, Travis Dermott, who's been disappointing. And you just hope that Jake Muzzin, you give him extra time off, and he could be the guy where him and Hall, they shut down Edmonton last year. They can maybe do that again.
Well, the problem is they don't look like those people who did.
They don't. Oh no, I know. Maybe health and rest. I don't know. And I know I'm drawing. grasping for straws.
Just as I was grasping for a straw. For a branch to hang on to pull myself back up the hill after I crashed my toboggan. I'm going to say something that sounds crazy. Maybe one of the more ridiculous statements I've ever made on this pod. But
wait. Is this Chiron worthy?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'll get out of the way.
Are we forgetting how much playoff duress the Leafs have been under and what's riding on this season? Considering that's all we talked about nonstop for 6 months and arguably the last 50 years, are we forgetting the pressure they're under to win a playoff round? Like when we say, hey, maybe tinker a little here, tinker a little there, I think this is because, you know, the Leafs look pretty good during the regular season. Well, they've had a couple ups and downs, but way more ups. And Campbell's been a nice story, and Matthews continues to amaze. And there's this feeling, you know, because they were riding so high for a while that, you know, they're really good. But dude, you nailed it. Like, they're third in the division. The division is incredibly good. Last time I checked, they'd be playing Tampa. I'd pick Tampa to win. Yeah. And this whole team goes to hell if they lose that first round, even if it's against Tampa. Like, it's bad enough.
Bob, you're absolutely...
Sorry.
Yeah, no, Bob, you're right. No, you're right.
It's almost like we've forgotten that they literally have to win this playoff round or the city will go crazy and the whole thing will be blown up.
Trade all your first round picks. Go full Herschel Walker. I don't care. You're right. Do whatever it takes to win a round. Also, do that for my fucking sanity. Christ, covering the Leafs this year is so much harder. You're right. I change it all. Do what you got to do. I don't care what. Win a goddamn playoff round.
Look, and I'm not even advocating for it, because I think what you said makes the most sense. You've got a good team. You want to give them a chance to win a lot in the future. But and trade deadline deals, like, barely ever work out for you. And when you take the big swing for the big rentals, whether it's a Giroux or whoever the hell it is, like, maybe it works out. I mean, Boston kept Taylor Hall, but there's no guarantee anything is going to happen. I mean, with their cap situation, who can you even afford to keep without sort of moving the deck chairs on the deck? So I don't know, man. Like, I really don't know. Like, it would be a lot easier if they sucked, and it'd be a lot easier if they were incredible. But the fact is, over the course of the season, they've averaged out to quite good in a division that's excellent, and they have to win. Mm-hmm. I would not want to be Kyle Dubas.
No. Get fired? Oh, no. Not, no,
he might
not
get fired if they lose, right? Like, you know, he's not above this. If he gets fired and humiliated in Toronto because they never won a playoff round, with all the crowing that's been done about like how progressive and great their organization is, and you can't win a playoff round in, what, 5-6 years with the second best player in the entire league on your team, like, you start to go, maybe this guy's shit at his job. You know, maybe he goes down in flames, because honestly, it's pretty effing embarrassing.
So yeah, no, I know.
Mistake.
I don't want to think about it. Let's move on. I don't want to think about losing the first round of the playoffs, Bob. Ugh. By the way, real quick, because I just want to distract, but still about the Leafs. I have no way of measuring this. I was actually going to send a message to Myrtle. But do the Leafs lead the NHL in being goalied by a kabillion over the number two team? They nearly lost last night in a game where they kicked the shit out of Anaheim, and it took a shootout because John Gibson.
Yeah, we've seen some good goaltending performances this year. I don't watch enough of the rest of the league to know. Is this something that just happens to other teams? There might be a little bit of woe is me-ism here. Maybe this,
of course, exactly.
This just happens, but yeah. And the funny thing is, honestly, Matt, like, there's nothing I look at when I, like, the Leafs feel like a good team to me. They feel like a good team in the company of some great teams.
They've got, you know, as much forward depth as any team in the NHL. They've got a really good first pairing, and they've got a goalie playing at a top five level. Like, they got a lot going. Again, the problem is location. If the Leafs were in the Pacific, they already would have wrapped up the division.
What is it about Toronto? Is it just because we're so close to Boston and New York? When we were growing up, we lived this with the Jays. The location, location, location thing, you know, and that was even before the realignment of the divisions, like, being behind Detroit was so painful. They were incredible. It just, like, when does, I guess we had this with the Atlantic. You know what? That was our comeback year. The Sam Mitchell year, the Chris Bosh year, when we won the Atlantic, and the Atlantic was so horrible.
Yeah, we had a run. We had a run of a bunch of years where we could have Bargnani in the lineup and we won the Atlantic.
Yeah, so I guess maybe I shouldn't complain, because as a Raptors fan, we got to feast on those those clown shows.
It's true, but Jesus, like, any other division, the Leafs play in the first round at home. Any other division.
I'm not sure if I'm the Leafs, I'd want to play at home.
Oh, God. Oh, it's just, and the thing is, you know, they're all acknowledging it. And it's true. Like, it is such a disadvantage. Like, watching that Raptors-Bulls game and seeing that crowd there, and this is not a cliche. This is not, it's Wednesday, I got nothing to talk about. You know, cliche fans and how they help. The players talk about it. The coaches talk about it, about how important it is. And it's not the players doing that to make the fans feel good. Like, when you arrive in Cleveland and you tell everyone in Cleveland they rock more than those assholes in Chicago. Like, this is such a, it is a massive disadvantage.
Do you want to do Jeff Pollock and we'll dive into the Raptors?
I don't do Jeff Pollock. I live Jeff Pollock. You see, everyone out there listening, at some point in your life, guess what? You're going to need a lawyer. And when you need a lawyer, you're going to want someone you trust. You're going to want someone who works hard. You're going to want someone that's going to be there for you. And I mean all of this. And he's our lawyer. He's my lawyer. He's the sponsor of this podcast. When you need legal help, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. And if you become good friends with him, maybe he'll open up a bottle of Burgundy with you, because the man's a peach.
Is that what's happened with you guys? Has he opened up a bottle of Burgundy for you?
It's been ages, since before the pandemic. But, you know, he lives close. There's been some Ubering there and then Ubering home. It's only happened a couple times. Got to meet his family, his kids. His kids are like the Von Trapps, or at least some of them are, or they when I met him. They might be listening to this podcast. And if they are, they're great at hockey. But I met him. You know the kids where, you know, they're really well-mannered? And I always think, wow, how do other parents feel about these kids?
I think generally when you see kids who are really well-mannered, it always plays well. Mm-hmm. The one thing where I draw the line is kids shouldn't be dressed the same like the Von Trapps. I don't want to know other people raise their kids, but generally speaking, I'm willing to say all your kids shouldn't be in matching uniforms. It's a little military.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you want to dress them when they're babies the same, fine. But the moment they no longer shit themselves, They should not be wearing the same outfits.
Well, and the Von Trapps, you had 5-year-olds and 17-year-olds dressing the same.
Yeah, that's
therapy waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. You might not want to do the thing where you tell parents how to raise kids because you're a parent. Me, I don't have any stakes in the game. Parents out there, take it from Uncle Matt. Don't dress your kids the same. They'll be in therapy. You're going to fuck them up. Your job is to raise good citizens who get jobs and pay taxes.
It's a very spiritual way of looking at the human existence. I want to talk about Scottie Barnes. It has been said by many that the Raptors' number one goal this year is develop Scottie Barnes.
Correct.
It's also been said that Pascal Siakam is playing as well now as he has ever played, and he's been an all-NBA player. It's also been said that Pascal and Scottie duplicate each other, or at least cross over enough so that the more Pascal does, the less Scottie does. I think that's an oversimplification, but we've seen Scottie go from being the best rookie to one of the top 3 or 4 rookies, which I think is natural. It's just a dip. I'm not certainly panicking over that. And that's maybe where he really fits behind Evan Mobley and Cade Cunningham. I would argue he's probably the 3rd best rookie in an amazingly good class. But I find that I run to Raptors Republic after every game to start comparing stat lines.
Yes.
And when I see that Scottie is like 16 points or over, or he's got 8 boards or over, 5 assists or over, like I feel good. And when he doesn't, I feel sad. So you're a big fan of Sports Happy. How do you feel about Pascal's rise and the possible way it's influencing Scottie Barnes?
What I like about Siakam is we're certainly seeing far more games when he takes more free throw attempts than 3-pointers. That to me is the worst version of Siakam. And their record is very different when he takes more 3-pointers than free throw attempts. I love seeing playmaking Pascal Siakam, and he's been able to do that with no Fred VanVleet. He's had some of his best games of the year. He was also not great last night against the Bulls. I look at it like this way, and if I'm going to go, okay, I'm going to go the happy way. His development, if it slows down Scottie Barnes a little bit. Well, what that also means is that Siakam will be in a great place where you could trade him for lots and lots of stuff. So, you know, if he's at all slowing down the development of Scottie Barnes, it also means he's getting his and putting up numbers. Siakam's the hardest player. Siakam is the single hardest athlete for me to talk about in this city.
Why? Because you like him or you just don't know what to do with him?
I don't know what to do with him. I'm like, okay, trade him. And then he goes through a month where he looks great. And he just seems like he's getting it. And he's doing what the team told him to do. And he's, you know, he had 12 assists the other night and all of this. And then I see other moments where it's late in the game against the Bulls and he doesn't have an answer.
Okay, so I kind of set it up in a phony way because I wanted to make another point. And I set up the false dichotomy between Siakam and Barnes. I wrote my Chiron so that I could draw you in.
But yeah, you got me.
I gotcha. But, you know, if Evan Mobley can do well with Jared Allen and Lauri Markkanen and Kevin Love and all those bigs, like, these two guys can figure out how to play together. I don't think that's the issue. What I do think is the issue, I'm coming to see more and more, is the OG conundrum. Because he has value. And he is a good player. Like, he's a damn good player. But in terms of roster construction, you know, the Pistons got rid of Adrian Dantley and brought in Mark Aguirre, and then they won. You know, sometimes you have to give up a good player because there's another good player who just fits your team better. And what I've noticed with Raptors Twitter is you can't address this because as psychotic as Leafs fans are about trading everybody, Raptors fans are psychotic about trading nobody. Everybody is the best that's ever played at their position, and everybody is the person you build a championship team around. Everybody. Like Yuta Watanabe, you could never trade him. You need a Yuta Watanabe. So I feel because, you know, we won the championship in 2019, we've learned to love this team, and the fans are so passionate and loyal. I think we're missing the obvious thing, which is you would never get rid of Pascal. He looks amazing. Trade fucking OG and get yourself a big.
I now feel like Raptors Twitter. I really like OG. I don't want them to trade him. How dare you, Bob?
Do you think this team is ever going to be top three the way it's constructed in the East? Like, do you think they're going to be really competitive against Milwaukee and Brooklyn? You know, assuming that eventually Simmons gets traded for somebody good, Embiid and whoever they partner up with. Like, do you look at this team and say, even when they develop, they'll be better than a Giannis-led Bucks?
If Scottie Barnes could develop to be a clear better player than Siakam, then I think there is a chance. But to your point, Bob, OG is having his best year offensively. Siakam is looking as good as he's ever have. You got in Scottie Barnes. Fred VanVleet's playing at an all-star level, and the team is 500. Now, part of that is just COVID wackiness. Well, every team's got to deal with that. The Raptors do have a disadvantage about having no fans at home for now a bunch of the games. So there is that excuse, which is a legitimate one. But the bigger concern is the bench for the second year has been horrible. And maybe if you traded OG, you get two really good pieces that can be guys that develop into the next Fred VanVleet and Norm Powell. And that helps your bench so much. But that's the problem with the Raptors. You got those core players doing well, and the team's 500.
Maddie, Fred VanVleet's numbers, and I know we've all talked about this incessantly on Twitter, but he's averaging over 39 minutes a game in the last like 10 games. Like, he's now starting to hit NBA record marks for most minutes played.
Yep.
You know, in a season, like, it's not going to last. The guy's 5'11", 6 feet tall. Like, it's not going to last.
You know what I wonder about, Bob? How do you think, like, they must be on the same page, but Masai Ujiri is the guy who said, you know, play in for what? Being like, it was against the play-in idea. Nick Nurse, VanVleet's number one in minutes. Siakam and Barnes are both in the top 10 as well. Nick Nurse is doing whatever he can to make sure he's at least in the play-in and maybe higher. I do wonder how they both view this season.
Well, I think they're trying to figure out what their core is, right? To your point, if you can get those four guys kicking together and then just start building out around them, I think they want to see like how good this core really is, and they're letting them play it out. But man, they are getting no help. Look, the Raptors are a fun team. I love the Raptors. They're not going to win a championship like this. That's it. Like, I don't know why it has to be more complicated than that. Like, it's just, they're going to be good. They're always going to be fun and interesting and filled with people we love. Unless they do something, they're not going to win.
Well, to me, then this goes to the biggest picture. What's more important, wins or lottery balls? Last year, it was lottery balls. Resting Kyle Lowry got you Scottie Barnes. Nick Nurse says he believes in the idea that going for the playoffs, making the playoffs, that does accelerate your progression as a young player. So, you know, what's more important, lottery balls or getting the 7th seed, winning the play-in tournament, and then losing to Milwaukee in 6.
Yeah, I actually think it's wins. And the reason why is the Edmonton Oilers. And not the Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl Edmonton Oilers, but the Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins Oilers, where, you know, the Nail Yakupovs. You know, those guys were just handed minutes. And they were kind of given the keys, you know? And they didn't have to fight, and they never played in meaningful games. And I think it made a lot of careers go a little bit sideways. What I like about the whole Scotty Pascal thing is Scotty isn't coming in and being told, okay, you're the most important thing on the court. The way that, you know, Jalen Green is, you know, that's going to mess that kid up. He's got like Christian Wood, like freaking out and all that. Anyway, the point is they're like, yeah, you're not as good as Pascal right now. You're going to learn from him. You're going to play a lot, but you're going to learn from them. Don't kid yourself, kid. Your touches come after the big dog eats. Your job is to rebound and facilitate. And then when you have your moments, like the thing that's so amazing about Scotty to me, is not that he's averaging, you know, between 14 and 15 points. His efficiency is really great. Like his adjusted shooting average is like 50%. You know, he makes the shots he's supposed to make. I love that about him. But, you know, there's a lot of nights where his stat line will be like 4 for 9 or 5 for 11. Like, he's not taking a ton of shots.
So no, he isn't. And Yeah, sorry.
No, I guess to bring the point back around, though, is like you're going for wins because you are establishing the culture. I think the Raptors have always been good at this. It's like Fred and Pascal are your main guys. You know, Pascal, thankfully, has been a lead by example guy on a lot of levels. Great. You have to live up to them. You have to live up to them. My thing about OG is he's been around long enough that I think we just know who he is. And he's got value. And you could probably get somebody who down the road is going to help you more.
It's yeah. Well, the other side will be there's still room for him to grow and that he's, you know, being able to expand his offensive game. But no, I like, listen, if you're going to look at the guy you would trade where you could get back value, certainly it would be OG Anunoby. To me, the issue with the Raptors is they need to find the next Fred VanVleet. Like if we treat this VanVleet as past Kyle Lowry, where's the Fred VanVleet? And we were talking before about Jake Muzzin. Well, in this case, it's Malachi Flynn. And listen, when you're drafting late in the first round, most of the time the guys aren't going to work out. That's the nature of the beast. But it's the step back of Malachi Flynn. Like, how much better would this team be? How many fewer minutes would guys like VanVleet have to play if Malachi Flynn had taken a positive step forward from his rookie season to this year?
It's a great point. And you know, when you say find the Fred VanVleet, I thought you were going to say like Gary Trent Jr. is never going to be the two guard that sets the league on fire. Gary Trent Jr. is fine. He's good. I like him. He's a good player. It's not a great player. He's a good player. I thought you meant that, but no, the lack of a backup point guard, God, like that, you know, Delano Banton after the first couple of games, like we all got sort of excited because we were like, ooh, spark plug off the bench. But Chris Boucher, very up and down, Precious Achiuwa, kind of a Bismack Biyombo sense of touch.
Yeah.
He's got those Biyombo hands and the scoring instincts.
That's not good. Yeah,
Malachi Flynn has been just such, it's been such a dud of a year for him. Do you look, you travel in these circles. Like, have you heard what the hell happened? Because it felt like he was coming up.
No, there hasn't been anything. It's just the fact is that just look at the minutes. He's playing very few. He's just nailed to the bench. Nurse is basically playing a playoff roster in January in terms of minutes. Clearly, it starts with defense. He's obviously not doing the job on defense because if he was, he'd be getting minutes. Like Nick Nurse is very transparent. You don't have to read between the lines because he'll tell you.
It's true. Part of me wants to not love Nick Nurse. It's the Arkells thing. It's not a knock against the Arkells, but it just felt like for a moment, maybe he's milking this a little bit. But, you know, and I've also been such a Dwayne Casey fan over the years. I just love Dwayne Casey as a person. So there was a bit of a kind of, you know, Alex Smith goes down, Colin Kaepernick gets the job feeling to it. But,
yeah,
you know, you can't deny the fact that he's just a much better coach than Casey, and he's really smart. And I kind of love his... Maybe this is a G League thing where you got nothing to lose because you had nothing, and so you're playing with house money now. But I love, to your point, that he speaks the truth with the minutes he gives. Like, he's not afraid to, like, lean on guys when he's not happy with them, even as stars. It's pretty awesome.
It is. By the way, two quick little betting tips, because it worked last time. The Raptors were a 7.5-point favorite against the Pistons. I'm like, everyone, take the Pistons on the money line. They're going to win. And, of course, they blew at the Raptors because that's what Dwayne Casey does against his former team. And also, Scotty Barnes, player prop, take the over for a number of assists. I think, Bob, I've won more money on Scotty Barnes' ability to hit more than 3.5 assists. It's definitely been one of my best go-tos.
I got to be honest with you, Matt. And, look, I know I'm in the minority here. But betting talk turns me off. Like, I come from an old-fashioned thing where you watch sports because you like sports. You know, but there's just something so, I don't know, like, I kind of feel like it's almost predatory the way we watch sports.
Oh, it can be.
Like everything has become a commodity.
Yeah. Oh, no, it absolutely can be. My job, and I always tell people, put $5 down. You know, I told people, put $5 down on Chris Paul winning the MVP. It's like 6,001. But the main thing I like to do, and I was going Johnny Bet with you there, is when I talk about a player prop bet, I turn it more into a conversation about who the player is. Like, I'm like, take Barnes plus, you know, getting more than 2.5 assists. Pause. I mean, look at the guy's instincts. Did you see what he did last night? Did you see him find that guy in the back door? So I do like the 5 second of bet, but that's to get into the sports narrative.
You know what, Matt? As they say on TikTok, I understand the assignment. Like, the job now is to talk up the bets, you know, like, it's what you got to do. But like, for me personally, I don't find, like, I guess because I just don't, right? Like, and in some ways, it's almost like when you're not a drinker and you have to listen to people talk about their drunk stories, like, it's kind of cute for a bit. But then after a while, you're like, you know, this isn't as interesting to me as you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same thing, like, with pools. Like, I never watch those shows where they tell you, like, you know, fantasy pools. But people love it, though. People love it. Like, I'm clearly in the minority. Look, I'm not even tobogganing anymore. So why should anyone listen to me? Yeah. I'm old fashioned.
Oh, no. I
like with a notebook trying to figure out what happened.
Hey, listen, I got a ton of that. I got a ton of that in me as well. And yeah. Oh, no. Like, I know that with the new show, and it's never 100% betting, that it's going to alienate some. My job is to make sure that the number that gets alienated, who are more old school, to keep it to as low a number as possible. But I know that it'll certainly turn some people off. It can't not. Sports is such a traditional thing where we follow it in one way.
You know, I have, I say kind of proudly, as much as you and I have been friends for so long, I have no idea what you're talking about. Do you have a new show, Matt?
Oh, no, gameplay. It's like Game Day, but we add more of a betting element to it.
So people tune in and you kind of tell them, hey, you can, how much money have you made? Like, are you a good gambler? Don't you have
a
gambler? Like, to do this?
I hit it over 60% of my NFL bets. And so far in the playoffs, I am 8-2 against the spread.
So if you're a chef and you make bad food, you're probably not a chef for long. Do you feel pressure now to be right in your bets because people are grading your performance?
Bob, to quote the great smooth Jimmy Apollo, when you're right 52% of the time, you're wrong 48%. No, I feel no pressure because my thing is I'll never be that guy that tells you who's going to win or I got this as a guarantee. I'm going to just go over a game, find what I think are the most interesting story narratives, and you take it as you see fit.
Okay. So
yeah,
should I gamble? Is like, would this make me like it more if I just start doing it?
No.
I mean, I know enough about
sports. No, absolutely not.
Do it.
I think the only way I would say to do it is, you know, do it in a fun way. Like, for instance, I saw a bet and I spent like 10 minutes of the show talking about it. Nick Ritchie to not score a goal. You had to bet $773 to win 100. He was minus 773 to not score a goal. And I just started giggling about the idea of putting $5 down on that, and you spend the whole time just watching Nick Ritchie. And if you put down $5, I think you went 83 cents back. So, like, I think there's sort of like a fun way of doing it where you don't bet more than $5 or $10. And that's the way I think for people that don't really bet to try it. And after that, if you don't like it, it's fine. You know, I tried smoking in grade 7. After a week, I'm like, yeah, I see what other people are into it. It's not for me.
So is TSN TV going to start doing this? Like, if TSN Radio is leaning into it, how long is it till Duthie and the panel are like doing second intermission prop bets for the upcoming?
Oh, well, you mentioned Chirons earlier. We see that all over the place. Watch SportsCenter. They're already doing things. Every SportsCenter will have, you know, the guys who talk, there's this thing called TSN Edge, and they'll have people on for like a 2-minute segment telling you who to like. Charles Barkley, TNT, they do a thing now called Barkley versus America, where Barkley had like a 4-player prop bet parlay on like the Utah Suns game. And you're like, do you think he'll be right? And $100 pays you $563. Like, it's all here.
Do you remember when it was verboten for players to show that they were gambling? And like, there was like, this is almost like if there was like a steroid sponsor for SportsCenter.
Mm. Oh, Bob, the NFL used to not allow Las Vegas tourism commercials in their Super Bowl. Now, not only do they have a team in Vegas, but on the NFL Network, They put the updated lines and totals for every NFL game.
You know what's the safest bet in the world? Mm. Whatever you think would make money, but people don't do it because it's immoral, just start doing it.
Yeah.
Like, when we came up in sports, like, we were on a show where they talked, you know, we talked all the time about wrestling. And it's a real thing that within the building, people look down on us because we took wrestling seriously. Fair to say?
Yeah. Beyond Steve Argentaro, absolutely.
Yeah, like there were people who thought the show was a joke because we didn't think, because it was fake, right? It wasn't real sport.
Yeah.
You know, it's a $1 billion concern now and everybody loves it. But, you know, at the time, we didn't have any shame about it. We thought people like this. We like it. We're going to do this. There's this great line in Succession where Sarah Snook's character, Shiv, she's sitting down with the guy who's like the Sean Hannity of their network. And they're telling him, you're going to go after this president. You know, without saying it, it was obviously in their business interests to put some pressure on this president. And he's like, you know, you're not going to do this because you're going to look stupid. And she just looks back at him and says, we don't get embarrassed. And I feel like that's kind of where things have gone these days. Is like nobody has the luxury of being embarrassed anymore.
I got to watch that show. But it's like it is.
It's so good.
I know. I do have to see it. But it is funny about the morale, like the moralities. I mean, we started off the record. Gambling was taboo and a little underground. And there was massive punishments for marijuana. Well, you know, like.
In fairness, Matt, like at the time, the three things that I championed on Off the Record were wrestling, the internet. Yep. And mm-hmm. I kept trying to push gambling, like, because it was obvious that, you know, that's the way this thing was going to go. And, you know, I feel pretty good but the thing that was interesting about it was at the time, there was almost condescension towards all those three things. It was like the internet was a devalued version of real broadcast. Gambling and pools were sort of for people who weren't real fans. And wrestling was for people who liked something fake. And those three things are now bigger than sports. Like sports exist because of these things.
So do you like the over in the Bengals Chiefs game, or are you worried that
what's the line?
I'll bring it right up for you right now, Bob. It is the Chiefs are favored by 7. I kind of feel like they're going to win in cover. Like they're going to win by more than the touchdown.
They're going to win by at least 17.
Yeah.
Because they want the championship and they won the game.
Yeah.
And I don't see them taking their foot off the pedal. And frankly, Cincinnati have been good, but not great. And the Chiefs are great.
Yes.
Watching Hill and Kelce on that final drive, the final drive of regulation, was like watching the best players in the world all doing their best at the same time. Like between Mahomes and Hill and Kelce finding his way open. And I can't remember I think it was Romo who said, like, you know, how does he get that open? Or maybe it was Nance or whatever. One of them said, how does he get that open? And it's like, well, it's Travis Kelce. And he's just going to, because he's great. Because after Gronk, he's the tight end of our generation. Like the Bengals are going to get destroyed. Destroyed.
I agree with you. And I'm even going to bet the over at 54.5. But Bob, I got an analogy, and we'll have to end it soon on this, on who Kelce, Hill, and Patrick Mahomes are. Okay. You know who they are?
Mm.
They're Anton Chigurh. You can do whatever you want. You can run as much as you want. Eventually death will come, and it'll probably be that weird air gun to your forehead. Like, it doesn't matter what you do. They'll find you.
Okay, I'm gonna change that just a little, or maybe adapt it a little, because I love that. It's the monster and It Follows.
Mm.
You can get as far ahead as you want, but it's coming.
Yeah,
and it's going to catch you. And you know what? You could stay up for 4 straight days and get into a rocket ship and blast away. Like I saw this last Sunday night. You can be as far away as you want. It will catch you.
So by that, what you mean, even at -135, take Joe Burrow over 0.5 interceptions.
I don't even know what that means. I really don't. I feel like it's when you give me your wine recommendations and you say things like, try something red.
Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.